I always expected to teach history. I never expected to make it. Making history is the stuff of inventors and politicians and astronauts, not professors. Especially not those with both feet in the past. Visitors to my office, and they are few, since no one is on college campuses anymore, are always struck by what they regard as the antiques. The brass doorknob that requires a physical key. The mechanical clock. The metal nameplate with Creighton Daniels etched into it. The sea of books. Meeting me in my virtual reality office, identical to my physical one, students are always surprised by two things. The books and the smell. They are one and the same, of course. Have enough old books on hand, and you get a musty smell. No one knows that anymore because no one owns books. With the exception of the door and a large window directly behind my desk, my office walls are covered by floor-to-ceiling wood bookcases filled to overflowing. "Where'd you get all these books?" students ask. The less polite ones add, "And why do you have them?" I like being surrounded by books. Always have, even as a kid. I used to visit my grandparents' house and climb up in the attic and dig through dusty boxes looking for old kids' volumes. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Harry Potter, the Planet Nine series, the classics. "Why don't you just experience those stories in virtual reality like the other kids?" my father would ask. He worried I'd fall behind the times technologically, which I did. But I also cultivated a love of books, and with it, a love of learning. By the time I finish explaining why I'm a bibliophile, most students scrunch their noses and ask, "What is that smell?" At which point I expose them to the delights of holding old books. The feel when you take one off the shelf, the aroma when you open it, the hint of mustiness. There's nothing quite like it. This particular Wednesday, I walked down the deserted third floor of McManus Hall to my office and started my morning routine. I grabbed a cup of coffee, sat at my desk, took a bite into a toasted cranberry bagel, and pulled up my grid interface. "Good morning, Alistair." Alistair appeared in one of the two chairs across the desk. "Good morning, Creighton. How did you sleep?" "Well, thank you. Access Culture Pulse, please." Alistair frowned. "You still have 7 dissertations to review before the end of the term. I can access the current one for you." I sighed. Dissertation reviews. The bane of my profession. Having neural implants that enhanced reading speed and comprehension by a factor of 8 didn't make 500 pages of National Stereotyping in Virtual Reality Programming and Its Effects on the Pre-Adolescent Cross-Cultural Relationships any more enticing. I did what I always do when faced with an unpleasant task. "Culture Pulse first, Alistair." 100 electronic images appeared in the air above my desk. The cultural items that received the most hits on the grid in the previous 24 hours. Number 1, please. The image on the far left moved to the chair next to Alistair. It was an attractive young woman with short brown hair, dressed in a blue sundress and sandals. Her name was Jade, from Auburn, Michigan. She'd had a dream in which Jesus appeared to her. The second image appeared. A young man dressed in a beige t-shirt and jeans. He'd had the same dream. I scanned the remaining images. 22 of the 98 were the identical story. I picked up my coffee and leaned back in my chair. How did all these people have the same dream? And why are they all from North America? An audio-only tap interrupted my thoughts. City of Champaign Police Department. This can't be good news. This is Creighton Daniels. Mr. Daniels, is it Mr. or Doctor? The voice was low, the speech slow. Either is fine. Is anything the matter? Mr. Daniels, the grid lists you as the primary contact for your father, Eli Daniels. I sat up straight in my chair. That's correct. Is he all right? There was a pause. I'm sorry to have to tell you. Your father has committed suicide.